Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us here for another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. Joining me today is Petty Officer First Class Mike Peets from the Coast Guard Aids to Navigation Team in Kodiak. How are you doing today?
I'm well, Dylan. Thank you.
And I should say that you are our first guest that we have back in person in the studio, and it is great to have you here.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you.
So why don't we just get right down to brass tacks? Let's talk about Safe Boating Week. What is it? What are the goals that it seeks to accomplish, and how does it go about achieving those goals?
All right. So National Safe Boating Week is a national annual event in which the Coast Guard and auxiliary units throughout the service engage the public and media to heighten awareness of boating safety practices prior to Memorial Day weekend, which typically serves as the first, you know, boating weekend of the season.
So now that people are getting out into their boats, so this is occurring this time of year because this is when people are starting to go out and do recreational activities on the water.
Right.
So is Safe Boating Week a new initiative? What's its history?
No, it's actually it's not new. This is actually the 50th anniversary of the Safe Boating Weekend. It started in 1971, and basically Congress and Coast Guard and other agencies saw that boating casualties were increasing around this time of the year. So June, July, and August are normally like the busiest seasons for boating. And so they said, you know, what better way to try to get our message out there and keep people safe than starting this national boating safety?
Getting into some of the issues that contribute to casualties while people are out and about on their boats, from the perspective of the Coast Guard, what are some of the things that you see more often than others as factors in casualties for boating?
So I would say the number one casualty for the number one cause of casualties for boaters on the water would be alcohol. Alcohol impairs your judgment. You know, it has all sorts of physiological effects on your body. Number two would be the improper or not wearing of life jackets. I believe it's upwards of 86% of drownings occur for boating casualties, and of those 86%, 79 are due to improper or not wearing a life jacket.
So where alcohol is concerned, is that typically an issue of people making poor judgments as far as like steering and speed at which they're taking their boats, or is it an issue of being unable to swim properly?
So it's both. So when you drink alcohol, you don't make good decisions, so you might not operate your vessel at a safe speed. You may not operate it on the right side of the channel. You could drive into incoming traffic. And also, if you do fall out of the boat and you have to swim, you know, if you're intoxicated, you're not going to be able to tread water or swim, you know, as good as you would having all your faculties about you.
So we've talked about what some of the behaviors of irresponsible boating look like, and what does a responsible boater look like? How are they behaving and acting on the water so that they're both contributing to their own enjoyment but not contributing to a dangerous environment for themselves or others?
Sure. Responsible boating, you know, there's many factors that go into that. You know, the first thing would be is wearing your life jackets and having a life jacket for every person on board. Children under the age of 13 are required to wear a life jacket by state and federal law. You know, not allowing children to ride on the bow of the boat, not allowing children, you know, to ride on the very back of the boat. Completely abstaining from alcohol while operating a boat. Filing a float plan whenever you do decide to get underway and enjoy your boat. Somebody needs to know where you're going, what you're doing, and when to expect you back. Other than that, knowing your boat inside and out, you know, what safety equipment you have on board, having a good working fire extinguisher, flares, a sound-producing device, all of those things, and even, you know, you could go as far as taking a boater education course online or in person. I know COVID's kind of messed up all the in-person stuff, but their State of Alaska and the Coast Guard Auxiliary both provide a online boater education course.
So where the alcohol is concerned is, hypothetically speaking, you could go to a dinner party and you could have like a bit of beer, maybe not both, but maybe you could have a little wine,
right,
and what have you, and you would hypothetically speaking, be below the blood alcohol content limit that would make it illegal for you to drive.
Right.
Is there any amount that is tolerable for operating a boat or none whatsoever?
So I would say, in my personal opinion, and this is just my opinion, it is not from a law enforcement stance or any stance like that. I would say if you're out on the water, 0%, abstain from alcohol. It's, if you abstain, you can't go wrong.
Okay. And is that for all persons on the boat or just the person driving or operating it?
I'm going to say all persons on the boat, you know. Do your fishing, have a good time, and then when you get back, you know, that's when you can enjoy yourself.
Celebrate the good catch.
That's right.
Are there any tips that you can give local boaters that people might not know, or people who think that they might be being fully responsible might not know, that can ensure that they're being as safe as possible out on the water?
Sure, yeah. You know, the big thing that I see is having a secondary means of communication. A lot of people don't think about it because, you know, they just go fish out in Chiniac Bay or Buoy 4, or, you know, where cell phone reception can be good. But then, you know, you go to take a picture of your prize halibut and you drop your phone in the water and now you have no means of communication. So just having a secondary means, you know, whether it be a VHF radio, you know, Coast Guard can be reached 24/7 on Channel 16, you know, in reaches, such as, you know, the new Garmin inReaches and those type of things, they're becoming more affordable every day, and it's not going to hurt having a second means of communication. You know, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah, you know, when my parents found out I was moving up to Alaska, they made sure that I took one of those up there with me.
Yeah, I don't leave the house without my inReach, because you never know where you're going to end up. And, you know, other things like, you know, they say dress for the water, not the weather. You know, everybody knows Kodiak, the weather can turn in 5 minutes, you know. You go out into Chiniac and it can be glassy smooth, and an hour later, you know, you're in 6-footers. So, you know, just if you got to get in the water, you need to make sure that, you know, what you're wearing is going to protect you.
Right.
And, you know, other than that, just, you know, knowing your and your vessel's limitations, you know. Like I said before, the weather can turn on an instant. You don't want to be caught in, you know, some rough weather and be in a little, you know, 14-foot, you know, open cabin, you know, dinghy.
Right. So what are some behaviors off the water that can help contribute to safe boating on the water?
Yeah, so I touched on that previously. You know, a big thing is your boater's education courses. You know, getting at least one of those under your belt. You know, that way you know the rules of the road, you know, how you're supposed to navigate on the water, what safe speed looks like, you know, how to communicate with other boaters or commercial traffic. So boater education, and then before you're getting underway, you know, filing a float plan. And a lot of people don't think about it, but checking your safety gear before you go, making sure your fire extinguisher is, you know, it's in the green, it's got a good date on it, you know, knowing how to use your fire extinguisher, checking your flares, making sure your flares are still good. You know, it's the preparation that, you know, leads to your ultimate, you know, safe, successful evolutions on the water.
What are some items and equipment that can be installed on a boat to make it safer?
So recently Congress passed a federal law requiring engine cutoff switches to be installed on all new production vessels 26 foot and under. So that law came into effect on April 1st. And so basically what that law says is if you have a 26 foot or smaller boat that produces more than, I believe it's 3 horsepower, you are to have an installed engine cutoff switch. And if the boat is above displacement speed, or what most people consider on plane, that engine cutoff switch is to be attached to yourself. And the reason behind this is on older boats, if you're up on plane making way and you fall out, well, the boat keeps going. Or if you're turning, the boat spins in a circle and, you know, maybe eventually runs you over. I don't remember the exact number, but I believe it was like 45 people were killed last year by falling out of boats and being struck by a boat or by a propeller. So having those cutoff switches installed and used is definitely a good thing. And for any boats that were built prior to January 1st, 2020, they are not required, but I would highly encourage you to install one if you don't already have one.
So we're talking about Safe Boating Week right now, but how does the Coast Guard tackle the problem of boating safety going around the course of the calendar year?
Sure. You know, the Coast Guard, pretty much wherever there's water, the Coast Guard has a presence. You know, Great Lakes, Alaska, Gulf of Mexico, East Coast, West Coast, and pretty much 24/7, 365, there's a Coast Guard asset somewhere that is, you know, they're out doing recreational boater safety boardings. You know, they're doing awareness events like this. So, you know, we realize that, you know, people are out there, things are going to happen. But, you know, if we can have a presence and educate, hopefully we can reduce those number of casualties on the water.
So getting into the brass tacks of specific items, what are some of the rules surrounding personal flotation devices?
Yeah, so personal flotation devices, or PFDs, as people probably hear us Coasties call them all the time. So like I said earlier, for children 13 and under, they are required by state law. And that's pretty much state law wherever you go. And every person on board should have a PFD. Obviously, a lot of adults don't wear them, but they should at least have one. And you need to have a throwable device as well, whether that be the cushion style or a life ring. You need to have PFDs for every person on board and a throwable.
Do you guys do safety inspections of pleasure craft if the operator asks for one?
So we do not do them ourselves. I know the Coast Guard Auxiliary, I know they provide safety inspections. I don't know what their in-person, you know, what their in-person inspections are looking like due to COVID. But I do know that you can go online and find their check sheets and resources for doing your own safety inspection. And it's basically just a check sheet of what they would be looking for that you could do yourself.
For those who aren't in commercial industry, how can they look out for their own survival equipment? And what do you do if you have, say, expired flares or expired batteries on a survival suit?
Okay, yeah. So, basically, the best way to look out for your survival equipment is not letting it expire. So everything that you buy, flares, you know, air horns, inflatable vests, everything, fire extinguishers, all of those things come with an expiration date, which means they're good up until that date. But after that date, they might work, they might not. It's not a chance you want to take. So, you know, basically just knowing that your equipment is in good, serviceable working order, that's basically the main thing. And I can't speak too much for expired flares or batteries. You know, I know Kodiak does a annual hazmat cleanup.
Right.
So, you know, I would say if you can, hold on to those until they have the community cleanup. But, you know, if you got a flare that's getting ready to expire and you want to get rid of it, then, you know, don't shoot it up in the air. But, you know, I could say you could strike it and let it burn out and then throw it in the trash. Just make sure you're doing it in a safe manner.
Right. So you've mentioned some of these online resources. Let's get very specific into where people can get this information and how they can apply it themselves.
Yeah, so I got it right here. So if you want to take a boater safety course, you can go to www.cgox.org/boat-INGED/. And that will take you to, will take you to the boater safety courses that are offered in your area. And then also the state of Alaska offers an online boater safety course, and that can be found at www.boat-ed.com/Alaska. And then also, if you want to get a vessel safety check, you can go to the Coast Guard Auxiliary website that I just referenced earlier, and you can sign up for that as well.
So for the, and this might be a little bit outside of your wheelhouse, is there like a licensing system for a boating license here in Alaska for recreational craft or no?
So boat licensing, that's done at the state level. That's not something that we can federally enforce.
Right.
I don't know what Alaska's requirements are. But I'm sure you could look it up online.
Right. No, I was just asking because I was visiting family in New York, and I think at the time you didn't have to have like a proper boating license. If you have a driver's license, you
right?
Were just
fine. I believe that's the way most states are. I know a lot of states are gearing towards, you know, driver's license with a boater education course.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's state by state.
Right. And then in my home state of Washington, there's like a very serious formalized
right.
licensing system.
Right. Yeah.
We've got a few minutes left here in the show, and I'm sure that you have some pretty incredible stories about people just really flagrantly violating the rules and best practices of safety.
Yeah, you know, before I was up here, I spent 4 years down in Texas, and I was at a small boat station there, and pretty much all we did was interact with the boating public, you know, 365 days a year. We did a lot of vessel boardings. Seen a lot of great stuff, seen a lot of bad stuff. You know, the big thing is bow riding, you know, boats pulling 20, 30 knots through the water, and a dad's got his 8-year-old kid up on the bow with no life jacket. You know, you find people passed out in the boat with, you know, 30 empty beer cans, and, you know, they're drifting into a ship channel and a 1,000-foot tanker's bearing down on them. You know, you find a lot of overloaded vessels. We rolled up on a boat one time, then there were 14 people in a 21-foot boat. The boat was taking on water, but they were still fishing because the fishing was hot. And, you know, we're like, what are you guys doing?
Oh, my goodness.
So we took half the people off the boat, and we terminated their voyage and took them back to the ramp. And, luckily nobody was hurt, but, you know, people get out on the water, and we want everybody to have a good time, and we want everybody to be safe. You know, at the end of the day, we want everybody to come home. If we're not getting calls, then that's a good thing. So, you know, if I had a last minute plug, you know, I would say, you know, please, please, please wear your life jackets. You know, I can't say it enough.
Yeah.
You know, wear your life jackets, have your safety equipment, you know, make sure your safety equipment's good, make sure somebody knows where you're going, and, you know, just be smart and be safe.
So tell me about some of the different communities that you've worked in to do this sort of enforcement. Have you been, like, just all over the country doing this sort of work? Or?
So, it's actually funny. I've had an interesting career. Kodiak was my first... This was my first destination out of boot camp, and I was on the formerly the Monroe, then the Douglas Monroe, but now it's been decommissioned. And from there, I went to Machinery Technician A School, which is where I earned my rating. And then from there, I went to another cutter out of Wilmington, North Carolina, where we performed mostly counter drug and alien interdiction operations. And then from there, I went to a small boat station in Galveston, Texas, and that's where this stuff, this safe boating stuff really came to play in my job. Cause we were doing, you know, 20, 30 boardings a day, while we were on duty. And, you know, you see so much crazy stuff out on the water. You know, unfortunately not everybody makes it. You know, we hope that people do make it, but there are the times where there's nothing we can do. We just can't get there fast enough. You know, rip currents are really bad. I don't know if they really have rip currents up here, but, you know, the water temperature here is the big thing.
Right.
You know, most people put their toes in the water, and, you know, they might wade up to their waist, but when you're in a boat and you get thrown from the boat and you hit that water, you know, your instinct is to gasp, you know.
Right.
That's when, you know, you swallow a bunch of water and you drown. So, yeah, so leaving Texas, then I came back up here, and my job up here is completely different from what I did in Texas. You know, aids to navigation, or ATON as we call it, is more the prevention side of the Coast Guard. Your small boat stations and all that, that is response. We're prevention. So we are, our unit, the aids to navigation team in Kodiak, we're charged with maintaining all of the fixed aids to navigation, which would be your day boards, beacons, lighthouses, ranges, those sorts of things. We're charged with maintaining those. And we've got a pretty expansive area of responsibility. Mm-hmm. It ranges from Cordova all the way up to Point Hope. I don't know if you know where that is, but it's pretty far north.
Right.
It's past Nome. So, and then we've got some aides on the Kenai Peninsula as well, and of course all of our local aides.
So, what are some of the, I know you mentioned that they've got pretty nasty rip currents out in Texas. What are some of the challenges here locally as far as boating safety goes relative to?
So, you know, like I said earlier, the weather. Mm-hmm. You know, you could go fish buoy 4 and it could be, you know, calm, flat, you know, beautiful bluebird, sunny day. And, you know, you transit through the channel and you come over into Chiniac and now it's 4-footers. You know, or you go over into Middle Bay and, you know, the weather's bad there too. You just never know what the weather's going to do here. You know, we're an island in the middle of the ocean and you just never know. Another thing is, you know, rocks. You know, down south, you run up on a sandbar, you know, no big deal. You wait for high tide and you push the boat off the bar. You know, here you hit a rock, you know, your boat sinks or you get ejected from the boat or, you know, anything else could happen.
Right.
You know, I would say the biggest thing here is just the weather. It's such an unknown.
Yeah. There is a running joke here at KMXT that the reason that we're doing the weather every hour is to correct the past hour's mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something else. I mean, even just, you know, it could be overcast and raining on base and then I drive into town and, you know, it looks like it does right now.
Yeah.
So you never know.
So I remember, like, one of the incredible things for me was I grew up in the Seattle area, and we live out on the, you know, the lake. We have a view over of Lake Washington, and you can see people out there with speedboats just not quite year-round, but when it gets nice and warm and sunny out, I mean, it'll be 80 degrees.
Right.
And I didn't know this, but a majority of the fatalities happen in the summertime, not because more people are out in the water, although obviously that plays a factor into it, but it's not that, you know, people are crashing into each other. It's that the water temperature is still lethally cold, even at
right.
that time of year.
Right, and that's the problem that we face here as well. You know, the water temperature in the wintertime, you know, it gets down into the 30s, which is super cold. You know, salt water freezes at, I think it's like 27 degrees. But, you know, in the summertime, the water warms up to 50, you know, mid 50s, and everybody's like, oh, the water's warm. Well, the water's warm when half of your body is still out of it, you know, but when you're submerged all the way up to your neck, that 50 degree water sucks the heat out of your body really fast. And your survival rate decreases very rapidly.
So I was talking to some of the guys in the station earlier, and I didn't know this, but a lot of they were saying that not an insignificant number of people have survival suits on their craft. Is that something that you've seen, or is it just sort of depends on who you're talking to?
You said not a significant number, very many.
Well, yeah, how many would you say it is?
I don't know. I don't own a boat per se, but if I did own a boat, I would have a survival or immersion suit. I would have one for, you know, at least myself and my family, because I don't want to get in that water.
Yeah,
that water's cold. You know, I'm a southern guy. I like the 80 degree water, but that water out there is cold.
Amelia Eagle at the station is a surfer, so she's always out there with a wetsuit. Like,
sure,
that's so crazy to me. I mean, yeah. You couldn't get me out in that water.
Yeah, we were. So I didn't get to talk about it, but I'll do a quick little plug for it as well.
We got time, please.
The primary mission of the ant here in Kodiak is, you know, we maintain the aids to navigation in the area, but our secondary mission, and just as important, is we provide a surface asset for the air station to train with. So all of their pilots, their flight mechs, their rescue swimmers, they get all their hoisting evolutions. The C-130s, they do their drops. So we provide a small boat out in the water for them to do all that with. And that's actually my main job, is making sure that that boat is ready to answer all bells, basically. So, we were coming back from working with a couple air station assets the other day, and we saw a guy water skiing in Women's Bay. Like, he's in a wetsuit and boat's just towing him around water skiing, and I'm just like, you gotta really love water skiing to be out there doing that. Because I mean, I think the water had just hit 50 that day. So
he must be like insanely good, right? I mean, there's no way you're doing that unless you're just the best water skier on earth.
Was he
shredding when you saw him?
Like, I'm sorry. You know what? He wasn't water skiing. He was actually wakeboarding. He got a little bit of air. Yeah, he cut over and jumped the wake, and he got some air.
Wow.
So
okay, respect.
I don't think he was wearing a life jacket though. So if you're listening, next time wear a life jacket.
Are there any other, like, so we've mentioned water skiing and wakeboarding. Are those activities generally safe? Is there anything that you say that you probably shouldn't be doing out on the waters in Kodiak? Inner tubing.
You know, I don't want to say don't go out inner tubing, obviously, because I don't want anybody to not be able to have fun, but just know your limitations and know what you're doing, you know. I would say don't go wakeboarding or water skiing or inner tubing in the middle of a channel. You know, make sure you're doing it somewhere where there's not a lot of traffic, it's wide open. I'm not going to say, you know, what you can and can't do. Just be safe and be smart about it.
Okay. We're down to our last minute here. Are there any final plugs you'd like to put out for the community?
You know, there's going to be a lot of boats out, you know, with Memorial Day weekend coming up. Just, you know, want everybody to stay safe, have fun, but, you know, wear your life jackets and make sure somebody knows where you're going and when you need to be home.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been Mike Peets, a Petty Officer First Class with the Coast Guard in the Aids to Navigation team in Kodiak. Really appreciate you coming out, and it's good to have people in the studio in person again.
Thanks, Dylan. Appreciate it.